Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamer, the radio show with Robert Noss. This is where we affirm the power of dreams, synchronicity, and imagination to expand our lives, to put us in touch with something more. We have a wonderful guest today. What a treat. Her name is Asia Sula. She's a beloved herbalist. I have to say herbalist because I'm Anglo-Australian. She runs a wonderful teaching school helping people to be natural healers called One Willow Apothecary. She is an earth keeper, and she has written the most beautiful new book called Mirrors in the Earth, and it will teach you that not only is the world your mirror, but the world is looking at you because it's alive and conscious, it's tracking you, the birds are singing with you and for you. Asia, it's so good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Robert. It's really delightful to be here.
Well, I applaud this book. I mean, you're a poet of consciousness. You write with poetic clarity. You write about all sorts of things I want you to tell us about. And at some point in the show, I'd actually like you to lead one of your meditations. You have really excellent meditations and writing prompts at the end of each of your chapters. But let's start with what you have to tell us about your experience of how keeping a garden, sometimes under difficult circumstances, can be a lesson in maintaining the garden of the self and setting boundaries. And that story starts, I believe, in a small yard in Brooklyn, doesn't it?
It does. So my first garden was a garden in a little postage stamp of a backyard off the L train in Brooklyn. And I was just really excited about having a garden, even though I didn't really know anything about how to garden. And, you know, it was an adventure of digging until we reached the bricks of what had been kind of a victory garden era garden, and bringing in topsoil and, you know, planting out the things that we wanted to see grow, me and my roommate. And it really wasn't until the midsummer that we kind of realized, you know, once everything grew leggy and tall and went to seed, that we realized we had missed sort of an essential step in gardening, which was this step of needing to weed and cull and cut and prune. We'd kind of just let everything grow leggy and long and wild, which has its own beauty, but it wasn't a garden. So over the years, I've learned and internalized this lesson in a big way. And, you know, I've moved to many different places over the years, and every different place I've gone, I've started a garden. So I've probably started a dozen different gardens before I landed in the house that's now my home. And over the years, the gardens have really taught me that when we hold boundaries, we have the ability to have our inner gardens flourish. So I identify as a highly sensitive person and an empath, and I know for folks who identify that way, it's extra hard to hold boundaries because you're kind of a naturally porous person. And there's often this belief that, you know, our role on the earth is to be boundaryless, to, you know, give and give until there's nothing left, to be an open space for anything to grow. And yet, the reality is that each of our lives are gardens, that we get to choose what we want to grow there, what we're here to tend. And I think the earth is actively encouraging us to see our lives this way. You know, I describe gardens as being given a corner of the canvas of the earth and being given permission to create there. And so your life is the garden that you are here to create. And in order to create a beautiful garden, to delineate it from the rest of the world and, you know, the wild spaces, is to decide what grows there and to be willing to weed and cut and cull and prune. In short, to be able to make boundaries. And so it's something that has really helped me as I continue to learn that it's okay for me to pull a certain plant if I don't want it in a certain space, or to, you know, relocate something that I would prefer to look at elsewhere, that I'm also learning in this way how to do that within my own life. And that not only is that okay for me to draw these boundaries, but it's how the garden of my life flourishes, and it's how I then give back in beauty and abundance to the world.
You talk as well as you write, Asia, which is a great gift, and you've just given a wonderful example of how your book, Mirrors in the Earth, prompts us, prods us, goads us to make connections between what is around us and what is within us. I mean, you remind us, writing about gardens, that we derive the word from an Anglo-Saxon root meaning a walled enclosure, and most of us are even if only dimly aware that paradise is usually depicted as a garden in so many traditions, and so to grow the paradise of the self or maintain it, as you remind us, we need to set boundaries, we need to cut back, we need to prune. You know, when I was learning from the Native American people I know best, after I was called in dreams by Nirondiwano, a woman of power of the Mohawk / Huron Iroquoian tradition, I learned about something which is embodied in almost every page of your book, which the Onkwehunwe, which is a Mohawk word for the Iroquois, the Onkwehunwe call the confession on the road. You may have heard of this. If you haven't, you're embodying it in your own way very beautifully. But what I learned from them is that the best way to get things off your chest, the best way to heal, and by having others bear witness to your pain and your trauma, is to simply find a path in the woods and walk it and say what you need to say, aware that everything is listening. The tree is listening. The owl is listening. The lake is listening. And I thought, what a wonderful way to approach healing and truth. Truth may be a walk around a lake, said Wallace Stevens, to vary it a little bit. So tell us a little bit about your own experience of releasing pain and trauma from yourself and helping others to do it by communing with the speaking land. That's an Australian Aboriginal expression, the speaking land, which conveys what you also tell us so beautifully, that everything is alive, everything is conscious.
So I was diagnosed with a chronic pain condition when I was in my late teens, and I was in college at the time, and so I was having a very different experience in my perception than a lot of my peers, and I often felt invisible. It often felt like I was carrying a weight that I didn't know how to carry on my own, and so I started, just like you were saying, I started going out into the living world. And I started speaking to the trees and the creek and, you know, the squirrels hopping from leaf to leaf. And I found out in nature that I felt heard, that the things that felt too heavy to bear on my own could be shared, could be received, and that I was able to find hope. You know, I often say that the world inside my body was so painful, it pushed me to go out and to start communing with the living world. And to me, it was a natural impulse, and it was something that I felt the earth asking me to do. And I love that, you know, this awareness is something that can arise again just through coming into direct contact with the earth, especially for those of us who, you know, our ancestral traditions take a good bit more to uncover and to resurrect and remember, to just come back to this awareness that the earth is actually always telegraphing these messages to us. The earth is inviting us back into connection and conversation. And so, you know, at the time with this chronic pain condition called vulvodynia, I was told there was no recourse to heal. Unless I got surgery to remove nerve endings from my body. And, you know, I just had spent so much time in nature at that point that I saw the way that a frozen rut would flower over with chickweed in the spring, and how a flood would just bring new seeds to a field. And I thought to myself, if the earth can heal, then I'm willing to see what will happen if I can just hold this possibility of healing for myself. Even though I had been told that this was probably a pain condition I would live with for the rest of my life. And it took time, but I did eventually heal. And you know, I think that these miraculous stories are stories that we see repeated all the time in the living world around us, that nature is always moving towards healing and wholeness. And it's really, the invitation is really just for us to step and back into sync with nature and let sort of that healing river carry us. And so that was my experience. And this was before I became an herbalist. It was before I knew the names of plants. I just went out and started speaking to the plants. I made up my own names because I wasn't great at plant ID. And it's just, looking back now, it's just such an example to me that this invitation to participate is always there. You don't need a degree. You don't even need any particular kind of knowledge to start going out and really stepping into this relationship that is your birthright.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Back, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest, Dreaming Like Spring Water, is Asia Sula. Her book is Mirrors in the Earth. Asia, how do people find you online? Can you give us a website or something?
Yeah, so my website is onewillowapothecaries.com, and that one is spelled out. You can also just type in my name, Asia Suler. And I am also on social media. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube under my name, which is Asia Suler.
Thank you. Now, you know, I open Mirrors in the Earth anywhere, and I find delight. I find poetry. I find music. I find bird song. Here's just a sample, because, of course, I'm a dreamer. So here is Asia talking about what I would call dappled dreaming, napping in daylight as it happens among the roots of an oak tree. Just listen to this. Napping outdoors is a unique experience, like the sunlight dappling through the canopy. I drift in and out of sleep. The boundary between the dream world and the waking world becomes blurry. The sounds of the forest incorporated into my dreams. Instead of leaving my body, I come more fully into presence, as if I'm seeping into earth. like spring water. Just lovely, Asia, and it's clear that you are dreaming with all your senses wide open as you wander the Appalachian trails and other locales described in your book. I think of you following the smell of willows, a tree that's always been important to you. Witness the name of your apothecary teaching setup, following the smell of willow, and then suddenly there you are in a nest of willow trees offering a strand of your hair and biting into a twig of willow for its analgesic effects. Talk to us about dreaming with all the senses open and alive, and also talk to us about dreaming in the other sense. I didn't notice many, if any, experiences of dreaming in the night, but in a sense, your whole book takes us into a relationship with the land that makes the ordinary world a dream world.
You know, I've always been a very vivid dreamer. Dreaming is a huge part of my life, and I think one of the things that I've found about communing with nature is that it brings you into presence in a similar way that dreams do. And, you know, there's this, the concept of the dream of the earth, and the idea that our earth is I consider the earth an archangel. That's the word I like to use. It is a sentience that is much wider and wiser than my own, that I'm a part of. And when we commune with the living world, what we're doing is we're touching back into this dream that we're here to be a part of. And to me, that's a liberating concept, the idea that, of course, I come here on my own journey of, you know, learning and growth and soul expansion, but that I also was called here, that the earth asked me to be here, to be a part of her dream, if I were to use a pronoun. And I think that this dream, because it's arising from such a wider place than our own consciousness, we can't see the full trajectory of what this dream entails or, you know, where it's going. But humans were created for a specific reason to be a part of this dream. And the more we come back into relationship with the natural world, the more we can understand the way our own individual dreams are here to guide us in our lifetime, and the wider dream that we are here to be a part of and to enact. And at the heart of my book is really this concept that the way we reconnect with this dream of the world is to learn self-compassion, is to come back home to ourselves, because we cannot see that dream, hear that dream, and really hear the clarion call to join that dream with our gifts unless we have this ability to see ourselves clearly and to hold ourselves with appreciation and compassionate care. And so in this way, this journey of learning self-compassion, it's not a side journey. It's something that is the earth is actively promoting and actively interested and engaged in. The earth as a sentient, ascendant being is here to support us in coming home to ourselves, because that is how we come home to the earth and step back into the co-creative dreaming that is being on this planet.
What a beautiful, gentle manifesto for healing our own souls in order to reconnect with the soul of the world. I love the personal travelogues in your book, Asia. I mean, traveling from Brooklyn to a blue cottage in the Appalachian Mountains at such a tilt that plates as well as pens and pencils fall off the table, and then moving to a raw pine trailer where you, if you touch the wall, the pine resin starts dripping down, and finding delight in all of it and connecting in these very wildly remote locations from the point of view of most city dwellers, finding yourself at home in these places and being brave enough to take those roads in all weather and surviving it all. It's a grand odyssey. It really is. And then on every page, there's the sense of your active communion with the living trees and the living features of the landscape around you. You brought in a word that I didn't know, and I think I know a few words, but it's a word I want you to discuss with us. It's marescence. I don't think I'd ever heard that before. You were looking at a beech tree in winter, and you're noticing how it's holding on to its leaves, and you start thinking about how, you know, there are people too who in a sense hold on to their leaves through the thinning season of winter, and how this is a lesson in how we have a diversity of timelines and choose between us. Talk about your discovery of morescence, of noticing that some deciduous trees hold on to their leaves through the winter, and what that taught you about the human condition and the variety of choices of timelines that people have.
I was going through a winter in my life, in many senses of the word. I was grieving the ending of a relationship, and I would take this trail every day to the top of the ridge, normally in my pajamas with my hair uncombed, and I would get to the top of this ridge, and I would think to myself every day, I can't believe that this is the same, you know, the same path I've been at again and again and again in my life. You know, why is it that I seem to, you know, cycle through the same grief that I'm holding, the same things that I'm processing? You know, what, I think a question a lot of people ask themselves, what is wrong with me that I'm still holding on to this? And, you know, as I was thinking these thoughts, I noticed nearby there was an adolescent beech tree that had still held on to its leaves past the autumn time. And if you go walking in the woods, you might notice this, that there are certain trees like oaks and beeches that hold on to their leaves, even though they're considered deciduous trees. And I learned that it's a specific process called marcescence. And this process is a mysterious one to this day for ecologists. They do not know why this process exists, except that it does, and it's been around for millions of years, and it serves some sort of ecological function that we cannot yet understand. But what happens is these trees will hold on to their dead leaves throughout the wintertime, dropping them only once the new buds begin to swell into spring with those new flowers. And in that moment of seeing this tree and understanding more about this process, it was as if the earth was giving me this message of saying that what you hold on to has its own brilliance and its own timeline, that there is not just one timeline of growth and flower, fruit, and compost, that we each have our own individual timelines, and that those timelines are important, that we are holding on to something because it's still being worked out, that we are engaging in a big healing around this. And this diversity of timelines is something that brings beauty to the earth. You know, when we look at a garden, an ideal garden has flowers that bloom all year long. You know, if all the flowers bloomed at the same time, it wouldn't be a very spectacular garden. And so it's something, a story I like to share, especially with people who feel like they're late bloomers or are cycling around this feeling of self-judgment of, you know, why am I still working with this? Why am I still holding this? That this diversity of timelines is earth-given, it's natural, and even though it might feel a bit mysterious, there's something about it that is actually bringing an essential element to the overall ecology of the world and the ecology of your own inner landscape, your own inner growth.
Beautifully said, as always, and an example of how Asia, through her intimate relationship with the land, reminds us to step away from the rather stereotypical identikit versions of how we need to relate to changes in the seasons, the cycle of the year, and all of that, because many of us might say, well, when the time comes for deciduous trees to drop their leaves, that's when we should drop things, right? That's when we should simplify. That's when we should shed the old. Let's talk about other things in your book. Is the word cadmium important to you?
The word cadmium?
Did I dream this or did I find it in your book?
I think you dreamed this, Robert, but I'm very interested in what you dreamed.
Well, I have this in my notes from your book. It might have been a dream that wove through. Cadmium's garden. Perhaps Asia's other name, an elemental identity, is cadmium. Toxic if mishandled, alike to mercury, also the name of an artist's color, cadmium yellow. A name that might be chosen as a warning if you move to bluegrass country. So is that me dreaming an alternate Asia who found her own protection in a word that, you know, she borrowed? Is that Robert's dreaming around your dreaming?
I think it was Robert. I don't think cadmium appears in my book, but I'm feeling lit up by this, and I'm going to take this. I appreciate you bringing this in.
Well, I couldn't find it in your index. I looked through the book, and my notes from your book are actually rather rapturous, so it's a little hard to tell where I'm quoting you, where I'm off on a riff of my own, or where I brought in my own dreaming. But I think as I read you and pictured you as a very sensitive, empathetic young lady who'd left her relationship on her own out here in rural Appalachia and feeling some concern for your safety and so on, I think I was probably imagining or dreaming a carapace. I mean, an armoring that is done in imagination, not in any other sense that might have helped you get through. And it just wove into my notes on your beautiful book. So I hope you don't mind me throwing that outlier into the conversation.
No, it's a gift. Thank you.
Now, your chapters do end with these wonderful meditations and prompts to action, and sometimes they require skills we obviously can't practice in a podcast, in a radio show, like how to make a flower essence. But as you think about, you know, what you encourage people to do as they followed you through a walking meditation with nature, is there one of these exercises that you might be willing to share with us on this show so people can have a taste of how you guide them into experiential territory?
Sure. So we could drop into sort of a lived experience of this concept of speaking what feels too heavy to the world, to have it be carried by the living world and to be absolved. So I invite people to take a moment, if it feels good while you're listening, to just drop into your body. Maybe feel your feet. They're on the ground. Whatever surface is beneath you. Sinking into the root of your body, feeling your hips, your thighs. It feels good taking a deep belly breath and letting that belly expand. Perhaps even placing a hand on your heart and feeling yourself settle here in this moment. And if it helps you tune in, you can let your eyes gently close and just let that motion cause a cascade of relaxation all the way down in the top of your head, over your shoulders, pooling in the palms of your hands. Just taking a moment now to tune in to the sense of your heart. Just see if there's something weighing on you today. It could be a worry. It could be a memory. It could be a self-judgment. Just notice with an observational eye what it is that arises from this center of your heart. And now, if it feels good to do so, you can imagine yourself walking down a beautiful sunlit path in the forest. Just really let the textures and the experience here come to life. Seeing the light dapple on the path ahead of you, hearing bird song, smelling the freshness of the trees as they exhale into the wind, maybe feeling that wind move past you. And notice that you're walking now towards a particular place in the heart of these woods, a place that feels deeply comforting and familiar. And you notice when you arrive to this place, there seems to be a natural depression in the earth, as if newly dug by an awakened bear or a deer moving across the land. And this natural opening in the earth is just beckoning for you to come and lay down whatever it is that feels heavy inside of you. as you walk towards this natural depression in the earth, this place where you can let go, you feel even more support, peace, sense of well-being pervade. As if it's floating in on the very breeze, that the trees are there to hold you, and the earth is rising to greet you. And so you can witness yourself now taking this heaviness in hand. You might even see yourself pulling it out of your body, gently placing it now into that hole in the earth. And just feel it seep in like rain water, dissolving into the earth like compost. And just feel how the energy of that heaviness actually feeds the earth. It's something the earth is desirous of and welcomed. And then when you're ready, you can take some nearby dirt, sod, leaves, or stones, and fill back in this hole. With every handful, you can feel that what you have given to the earth is no longer yours to hold. That you can be free of that heaviness, that worry or anxiety. And when the hole is completely filled in, you might imagine yourself standing up. And just notice how much lighter you might feel in your body now. And whenever you're ready, you can walk back the way you came, knowing with each step you'll only get lighter and lighter, freer and freer. With each step, recognizing how supported you are by the world around you. Coming back now into your body, into the here and now. And just taking a moment to settle with peace into yourself, knowing that you can return to this visualization at any time.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much, Asia. You can see, everybody, why Asia is in such demand as a teacher and speaker. She really takes us where we need to go, and for a while there, on the path of that meditation, you took me back to the Smoky Mountains, Asia. I guess that's familiar territory to you. I'm not a happy camper, but more than 20 years ago, I was camping in the Joyce Kilmer Memorial Forest with those ancient first-growth poplars in the Smoky Mountains, and I had a night of extraordinary vision, which has stayed with me ever since. So thank you for putting me back into those foggy, misty mountains. We're listening to Asia Sula. Her book, Mirrors in the Earth, is subtitled Reflections on Self-Healing from the Living World, and that's exactly what it gives us. It gives us the world as our mirror, and it also helps us to understand that the animate world is looking at us. Baudelaire wrote in Correspondance about how we live. We are walking in a forest in life, a forest of living symbols that are looking at us. Asia gives us the same sense, grounded in her intimate familiarity with the trails, the springs, the streams, the trees, the birds of those mountains and other landscapes. And speaking of birds, Asia, when we come back, I want you to talk to us about your relationship with the birds. There's a heart-stopping moment in your book when you've become aware that the birds are all singing, the forest is full of noise, and perhaps they're talking about you, and perhaps they're singing their own songs, and suddenly silence falls. I think you might be among the roots of a tree at that moment, taking one of your dappled naps, and there is a hawk overhead. Without the hawk, I would not be doing what I'm doing. So I'm very interested in your relationship with the birds. So we're talking to Asia Sula. The new book is Mirrors in the Earth. I think it's probably time to take a break. And after the break, we'll come back. We'll ask her about the birds. I want to ask you about your lifelong love relationship with the willow, too. My grandmother tree where I live now is a great willow by a lake. So I want to hear you on that. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We'll be back after a short break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss, and our wonderful, wonderful guest is Asia Sula, the new book, the first book, and it's an incredible debut book, Mirrors in the Earth. Do go and get it. I mean, it's really worth savoring, and you'll find yourself picking it up at random and opening to a wonderful page, like being called by the smell of willows to a nest of willows where you can bite into a twig and get the healing that comes from that. So, Asia, you've had a lifelong love relationship with the willow tree. Talk about that, will you?
A willow tree was planted for me when I was born. I grew up in a very suburban environment in a row of duplexes, so we had this tiny little backyard. But when I was born, my dad and my grandfather planted this willow tree, and the area behind our backyards had been sort of a low riparian land before it was turned into suburban development, and so it would often flood. And so the willow loved it there. There were many a times where the backyard was a lagoon with just this mast of the willow standing out of the water. And that willow was my first real profound heart-to-heart connection with the living world. I would part the curtain of the branches and be in another world. I would climb up into the tree and bring my journal and write and whisper my secrets into her heartwood. And I felt every time I did, like this wave of energy would move from me into the tree and a wave of energy would be sent back. And before I had the words for it, I knew on this deep level that there was something more going on than just me having a fantasy life, that there was a true, deep, real connection with the sentience of this tree. And so I took that with me. And even though willow trees are generally short-lived, so by the time I was entering college, the willow tree was starting to end its life. One of the beautiful things about willows is they were designed to adapt and thrive in challenging situations, like on the edge of rushing rivers where parts of them will be broken and carried down streams, or even up high in the Arctic Circle. And so because of this, one of Willow's adaptation strategies is to send out a profusion of shoots. And any one of these long, slender whips of shoots can be taken and planted and create a new tree. And so as the willow tree died, this profusion of shoots came out like a fountain. And though I didn't take one of the physical slips of this tree, I took the memory and ended up creating my business, One Willow Apothecaries, in honor of this tree. And I carried this memory with me of this tree and everything about it, all the sensual detail, the way that the leaves fell and how it looked in the sunlight and the way it smelled. And so there's a chapter in the book where I talked about this experience where I had basically run headlong to the side of this riverbank in Oregon. I was there to teach at a conference, and it was the first day, it was opening circle, and I was struggling. And I was feeling a lot of shame around struggling in that moment, around feeling overwhelmed. And so I had run basically to this riverside to take some time to decompress and deal with the weight of this shame I was feeling around the overwhelm that I was experiencing here in this place. And I got to the riverbank, and this smell drifted in on the breeze. And the only thing I can liken it to is this maternal smell, like mother's milk. It was immediately so comforting to me before I even had a chance to connect the smell with a name or a place. And it wasn't until I dropped down onto the river's edge from climbing down the roots of this tree that I realized that this scent was coming from this whole shoreline of willows. And in that moment, I had a profound experience of bringing this heaviness and this doubt and this feeling of guilt with me to the shore, and then being met with this sense of maternal comfort and care and soothing. Anyone who knows about willow medicine knows that one of its most famous uses is the original aspirin. So it's one of the original pain relievers of the world. And this message floated in with the scent and with this experience. And this message was, the earth already forgives you. And subconsciously, I had been carrying this thought, which was, you know, can I be forgiven? Not just for my struggles that day, you know, or my struggles at the conference, but in a wider way. Can I be forgiven for being human, for, you know, living during a time when there's so much challenge and strife? You know, at this conference, there was a big focus on the Anthropocene and the ecological destruction that humans have wrought. And so there was a multifaceted heaviness that I was bringing to this riverside. And the message that these willows were telling me and the message that the earth was delivering was that you are already forgiven. Because forgiveness is a source of healing and a source of growth. And the truth is that the earth is only interested in growth. Not the kind of capitalistic exponential growth that we think of, but the kind of growth that is a clear-cut growing over again with fireweed, or the kind of growth where a flood leaves silt for new life to spring forth. And so if what the earth cares about is growth and beauty and evolution, then of course we're already forgiven for any of the heaviness we could be carrying, for anything we've ever done or ever will do, because forgiveness itself is a force of growth and healing. And it was such a profound moment for me in my life, and it was a moment where I really realized this book that I had been writing and, you know, writing drafts of and had all these stories for, that I wasn't sure, you know, what was the crux of this book? What was it about? It was that moment with the willows that I really realized that it wasn't just about this idea that learning self-compassion is important for our healing, but that the earth as an animate being is actually invested in us learning this essential truth that we are already forgiven, and that from there we can really step into the gift we're meant to bring to this planet.
Thank you. There is indeed such power in forgiveness, and what a wonderful way to recollect that, being held in the bower of the willows, learning that you are already forgiven. Such power, such release, such healing. So let's start talking about your relationship with the birds, Asia. You seem to have heard and listened to a lot of birds, and you make the ringing statement at some point, which some agree with and some might be puzzled by, that perhaps the first human language was the language of the birds. Perhaps language among humans begins with bird song. Talk to us a little bit about what you've learned about bird song and the birds.
Well, you know, humans are forest creatures in a certain capacity, and we're creatures who are attuned to the living world. Obviously, that's how we evolved. And so bird song carries a lot of information. So, you know, it's one of the thought experiments out there, and something I mentioned in the book is this concept that the first language might have been bird song, because we learned how to speak this language, how to understand this language, because that's how you tune into the information network that is constantly flitting around the forest and the open fields. And so, you know, as someone who, as an adult, really came into this loving relationship with the living world, really entered into it fully as an adult, I, you know, there was a lot of catching up to do in terms of what I had to learn, and I knew next to nothing about birds. To me, it was just, you know, it was sort of a cacophony of sounds that I wasn't able to pick out individual songs. So when I first moved down here to Appalachia, I took a birding class, And I was really interested to learn, could I pick out these bird songs? Could I learn how to identify these birds? Are we on a break, or are we?
Not yet. But since we sort of drew breath, on a very rising note, let's pause and come back after the break and hear more of what you've learned about the world of the birds. We're talking to Asia Sula. Her new book is Mirrors in the Earth. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do pop over to my website, mossdreams.com. You'll see that I'm leading a lot of online courses these days. I've gently returned to leading some in-person trainings, though not too many, but we have just started a new, very exciting online course, Deeper Adventures in the Multiverse with Active Dreaming. It's just started. It's not too late to register if you're feeling the call. And Asia Sula, give us your website once again.
That's onewillowapothecaries.com.
And that's one spelled O-N-E, right?
Yes.
All right. You were starting to tell us about learning the world of the birds and hearing the bird song and beginning to realize that the birds might be talking about us. Tell us more about that, our path of discovery.
Yeah. So as I learn to do live radio shows, I am also going to talk about how I learned this amazing fact when I first took this birding class. And the thing that I really took away from that class was this concept that we often go into the woods and think that what we're hearing is just, you know, the background noises of life going on without us. But the reality is that birds will often sense and see us walk into a space, and they will send out a call to let the other birds know that you are in the forest. And so what these instructors told me on the very first day of this class is that often, by the time, if you step onto a wooded path, by the time you get to the middle of that path, the middle of the forest, the whole forest will know that you are already there before you even get there, because the birds will have alerted the forest to your presence, and that aria will have been carried on further past your range of hearing until the entire forest is awakened to the fact that you're there. And, you know, they told us this story in part to encourage us to be quiet as we entered the woods, but for me, it was a profound moment of realizing that the birds and this earth that I thought was just sort of, you know, ignoring my presence or just not aware of my presence is actually finally attuned to the fact that I'm here, that the earth sees me no matter how invisible I sometimes feel. And it was just a moment where it changed everything about how I interacted with the living world, how I saw myself as a part of the living world. And after this class ended, I decided, okay, you know, with this rudimentary knowledge that I had about birdsong, I'm going to go to the woods near my house at the time, and I'm going to go for a walk and just see who I can pick out. you know, and it was interesting to step into the wood and sort of hear the long loop of a call being carried back and wondering, was this about me? And at some point, I decided to, as you mentioned earlier, sort of step off the trail and nestle down into the roots of a tree and take a little bit of a nap. Napping outdoors is just one of my favorite things, and I think it's one of life's greatest luxuries. And I laid down to take a nap, and as I mentioned, you know, sort of drifting in and out like the dapple of sunlight on leaves. And when all of a sudden I was awoken by this sharp call. And when you're in that dream state, you know, you're not able to rationalize. I'm not grasping immediately for the information of, you know, who made that call, what does that call mean. But what was interesting is the call woke me up immediately, because a part of my body went, it's time for me to wake up. There's something I need to pay attention to. And I realized that this call was actually the birds around me alerting the forest to the presence of a silent hawk overhead. And the shadow swept over me as I lay there, and I realized that I had heard and understood the language of the birds around me without the use of my conscious mind, from this deep space of literally dreaming with the earth. And because I had heard that language, I understood what was being spoken, which was alerting the other creatures in the forest to the predator swooping silently overhead. And it was just one of those moments where the conceptual idea that of course we can speak the language of nature, and that, you know, we're here to be in conversation, that it's a conceptual idea that is inspiring. But then to actually have an experience where your logical mind is offline, but the soul of you, the depth of you, is able to then respond, was just so moving to me. And I continue to be a student of the birds. I'm not an expert at all in birding, but they certainly have so much to teach, and it's a language I'm still learning to speak.
Another thrilling narration. Thank you. I love the way that you evoke liminal states of consciousness. I mean, I'm more familiar with them indoors in the dark or in the half light than outdoors among the roots of trees. So I've done some of that too. But the way that you talk about a state between ordinary consciousness and dream consciousness, this has always been prized by people who are really good at dreaming, in many senses of the word, whether it's dreaming in the night or dreaming in the day, in the animate world around you. I mean, traditions of shamanic dreamers, traditions of initiates for that matter, have always prized this space. The hypnagogic zone is what sleep researchers call it when they're talking about what people might be doing in bed in the middle of the night or before they've fallen asleep or after they first awoken in the morning. I have great, great, great respect for what becomes possible in consciousness in that drifty state. It becomes an everyday kind of yoga of consciousness where you can maintain a kind of continuity of perception. You do this, you know, in the roots of trees, napping in nature, with all of your senses astir, and the results are absolutely stunning, not least the creative results, because your ability to sing on paper or on screen or on the radio it has become remarkable, Asia. You've become a word doctor. You've become a word carrier of a very important and magical kind. I'm just delighted.
Oh, thank you, Robert. That is a profound compliment coming from you.
And I should say to our listeners, if you like books like Braiding Sweetgrass, which I know many of you have read, you're going to love Asia's book. Here I am giving you another push, because I think it really is a beautiful and important book. So here comes the moment when a dull radio host says to his guests, what else would you like to say to us, Asia? So there you are. What else would you like to say to us?
I think it's something that it sounds simplistic, but it bears repeating. Just this awareness that who you are matters to the world, that what you're working on healing, what you're carrying, what you are moving towards, your own individual journey of returning to yourself, of finding peace, of reconnecting to to the dream that you're here to live, that it matters to this earth, and that the earth is deeply invested in your flourishing, just like the earth is invested in the flowers of spring and the fruit of the autumn time, that the earth is invested.
This is a very interesting statement. I'm just going to try it, and maybe you'll try it with me since you gave it to us, and maybe our listeners will try it too. Who I am matters to the world. Just everybody try that. See how it feels. Does your body believe it, or does it squirm a little bit? Does your greater self believe it? Does your rational mind come along? Who I am matters to the world. I rather like it. It's strong. And I was thinking, well, if I say it, there might be a tinge of ego to it. I don't find too much of a tinge of ego. So that's just borrowing what you said and saying it back in the first person, making it strong. We'll be back in a moment, Asia, really just to say thank you and to say that who you are matters in the world indeed. You're listening to The Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knopf.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcasting coders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
You've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Knopf. Who you are matters to the world. Asia Sula, what a pleasure to have you and your living, animate relationship with the world on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for inviting me into this incredible circle of people that you have gathered here. It's an honor.
Wonderful. So to Asia and to everyone, may your best dreams come true and may you remember them.
Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program